This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by True Niagen. New True Niagen Pro contains a unique form of vitamin B3, clinically proven to safely increase NAD, which is a vital resource used every day to help fuel and maintain the health of all living cells. NAD is critical for energy and cellular repair and supports muscle function. But as we age, NAD has been found to decline up to 50%. True Niagen Pro is clinically proven to safely increase NAD levels, caring for your cells to help you age better and live better. True Niagen Pro is only available through healthcare practitioners. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com to get yours. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We're doing a deep dive on sex and an integrative approach to sexuality. It's a big part of overall lifestyle that relates to health. Negative health factors influence sexuality, and sexuality in a balanced way can give a real boost to people's optimal health. Mental and physical well-being. Dr. Castellanos, Madeline, we were talking earlier about the high prevalence of depression among women and the use of antidepressant medications. And, you know, a lot of women that I see in my practice, they're desirous of getting off their antidepressants because they say, well, while the antidepressants somewhat help their mood, they completely deaden their sex drive and interfere with their sexual response. So what's the story?
Well, that's very true. And the ones especially that are the serotonin reuptake inhibitors are one of the most difficult ones that impact libido greatly. They can also cause people to gain weight, which then works against them.
That's not sexy. Like, yeah.
No. And certainly not. And even if their partner says, you know what, I like those extra 10 pounds, you know, that woman's going to be thinking, oh my God, I have this extra 10 pounds. I can't. Yep. It's just, and they're not going to be able to focus on that. One of the things that's very interesting is I see a lot of women in perimenopause who now what is happening is their progesterone levels are dropping and they're estrogen dominant. Right. And they're finding that in that state, they are much more irritable. They are much more moody. They can't calm down. And when they go to see their primary care doctor, that's what they get this little combination, the dynamic duo of the SSRI and the benzodiazepine.
And what they need is some micronized progesterone.
I know, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
And that would help balance them out. And then once they get into menopause, then, you know, add some estrogen. That, because the micronized progesterone, you know, the first metabolite, is this nice GABA analog, which helps calm us down and feel nice and chill. And if you're missing that, you're not having that balance every month, then that's what you're missing. You're not missing more serotonin or more benzo.
What I often ask is, you know, especially if women have had children, I ask them, do you recall how you felt during pregnancy? That's often a key to their response to progesterone, because that's a high progesterone state. And if women say, sometimes they'll say, oh my goodness, if I'd known how good I was going to feel during pregnancy, I would have had, you know, four or five kids. then I really know that at the time of menopause, they're really good candidates for progesterone. Some women say, you know, I just felt awful the whole time during pregnancy. And, you know, maybe they're less likely to respond to progesterone. It is very individual.
Right. That's a great thing to ask them. And are you looking primarily for how they felt in the third trimester?
Which is the real high progesterone state. Yeah, that's where they kind of settle in with the progesterone.
So the trouble with psychiatric medications is we know what they do, right? We know selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors block the glial cells from sucking that serotonin back up into their cell, repackaging it and sending it back into the neuron so it can use it again. We know that what they do, but we don't know why that actually changes someone's mood. So to say, oh, yes, of course we know how they work. No, we don't know how they work because we don't know why that action results in less anxiety or less panic attacks or better, you know, better mood and less depression. But we know that when you start messing with serotonin, you're going to mess with libido. So if serotonin gets too high and the activity is not balanced, then you might not care if you have sex or not. You might have difficulty getting aroused. So serotonin, when it in the resolution phase, you know, once you've had an orgasm, you have a little bit more serotonin activity, you have more oxytocin, you have more prolactin, and that sort of calms down the dopamine effect, and then you don't really feel like having sex until that's passed. But if you're in that state all the time, right, mm-hmm. then you're probably not going to have difficulty getting sexual arousal. Now, some medications that work on dopamine and or norepinephrine, like
Thinking Wellbutrin, for example? Because yeah. that's actually a workaround for some women yeah. who experience problems on the SSRIs.
Right. Wellbutrin could have either less effect or help counteract that effect. And then Effexor, which works on norepinephrine, can also work for some women. Again, it's variable because it depends on the sensitivity of your receptors for each mm-hmm. particular neurotransmitter, which we don't have a good way of knowing right now. Mm-hmm. And how do you metabolize those neurotransmitters? And are you vitamin deficient? So can you make those neurotransmitters? Do you have the right precursors? Do you have the right cofactors? There's a lot of variables that go into it, but it's undeniable that when people get psychiatric medication, most of them are going to have some decrease mm-hmm. in either sexual arousal or sexual desire or ability to orgasm.
Well, it really argues for a non-pharmacological way of treating depression, and I think that's something that you attempt to do in many of your patients and clients, workaround because the medications are causing problems. So might you work with supplements or diet or various lifestyle factors to alleviate depression instead of using drugs?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, you know, as a psychiatrist who did their residency at NYU, I was taught very heavily in the medication, you know, treatment of depression and anxiety, et cetera, et cetera. But now that I've gotten into functional medicine and studied orthomolecular psychiatry and medicine, I realize, okay, well, we can change the balance of neurotransmitters if the patient has the right cofactors. So that would be, you know, vitamin B6, magnesium, zinc, those kind of things. If they have the right precursors, so the appropriate proteins, you know, tyrosine, tryptophan, phenylalanine.
So you use amino acids sometimes to boost production of the necessary neurotransmitters.
Sometimes. And then there's ways to see, okay, well, what depression was taught to me as a condition, and you get this condition, and then it never goes mm-hmm. away. Mm-hmm. But the way I understand it now is depression is like it's a nonspecific symptom of a lot of different, and it can be caused by a lot of different things. So some people are very sensitive to sunlight. And so when mm-hmm. they don't get enough sunlight, they might have problems with vitamin D, or they might just have problems with receptors in their brain that then turn on certain things. And that can result in depression. If you have trauma happen to you, that can result in depression. If you become diabetic and your blood sugar's off, that could result in depression. If you are a vegan and you know, don't get the appropriate amounts of B12 for some people,
or
that
iron, for example,
depression, yeah. or iron, etc. And the list goes on and on. I mean, I don't think it's necessary for us to make that whole huge complete mm-hmm. list now. But if we find what's the driving force, right, what's the root cause, and we solve that, then we don't need to have these medications. And the person is better balanced for all of their health. So they're in a better place to prevent risk of any type of disease because their metabolism is being set the way it needs to be.
So instead of side effects, they may have side benefits.
Benefits, right. Yeah. Better cardiovascular functioning, less dementia, better muscle health. Yeah, that's what we're striving for.
What about the relationship between hypothyroidism and sexual dysfunction? Hypothyroidism is so prevalent, especially in women. Does that play a role in the situation for some of your women who report low libido?
Absolutely. And again, it could be for many different reasons. So when you have low thyroid functioning, if it's not properly treated, you're going to have less energy. You may gain weight. Your thinking will be slowed. It's more difficult to become aroused. So physically, you're at a disadvantage already when your thyroid's not working the way that it could be optimally. The other thing, too, is that there are thyroid receptors on the ovary, and there's a lot of crosstalk between estrogen and thyroid. And so if your thyroid is low, your ovary is going to have more difficulty making the appropriate levels of testosterone and estrogen. So everything in the body works in concert together. It's not just single players. And it's important for us to think about that balance and that concert.
Otherwise, things like DHEA? Is that a tool in your armamentarium for women who have low desire?
Absolutely. It's so interesting because since I've been using DHEA, and you probably have seen this too, is because it's a upstream precursor. So DHEA gets converted into other steroids like testosterone and then eventually estrogen. But everybody has a different efficiency of the enzymes that work in that conversion. So I will give DHEA to some women and their estrogen levels will go up. I'll give DHEA to other women and their testosterone levels will go up. I'll give some DHEA to women and their DHT levels go up and they start growing hair and, you know, on their chin and pimples on their back and like, I can't take it. Mm-hmm. And even
it's
with
very variable. Yeah.
It's very variable. And again, we don't know enough about all of the different players to know exactly how a person's going to respond. But for some people, it's wonderful.
Okay, folks, at this point, let's pause and allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share this important message with you.
This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by True Niagen. New True Niagen Pro contains a unique form of vitamin B3, clinically proven to safely increase NAD, which is a vital resource used every day to help fuel and maintain the health of all living cells. NAD is critical for energy and cellular repair and supports muscle function. But as we age, NAD has been found to decline up to 50%. True Niagen Pro is clinically proven to safely increase NAD levels, caring for your cells to help you age better and live better. True Niagen Pro is only available through healthcare practitioners. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com to get yours.
Thanks for listening and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a continuing free resource to you. And now back to our guest, Dr. Madeline Castellanos. What about natural compounds? You know, I think we can get away from the notion that they're magical aphrodisiacs like Spanish fly or things like that. Those are in disrepute. But are there certain herbs, adaptogens that may help women and gently modify their metabolism or their hormones to work on neurotransmitters that improve sexual response?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's many herbs that have estrogen activity and are sold in supplement form to try to help alleviate things like hot flashes. They have very mild estrogen activity. And again, because everybody has a different receptor profile, what one woman says works great for her, another woman says, I didn't feel anything with that.
Yeah. Welcome to my world, because right, this is what we experience when we work with especially women patients in regard to mood and issues related to sexuality, is that different strokes for different folks, big time. It has to be very individualized.
Right. And we do know that maca tends to help sexual arousal, and it doesn't seem to have any effects on changing hormones. Because
right.
Some of the...
Say you have a cancer history or something like that.
Right. Men will use yohimbin, and that's can cause anxiety and panic. And so whatever works for men usually also does work for women. It's just that because the as I mentioned, the physiology is different, it may not always work the way that we think it's going to work. The reason why Viagra works in men is because when they have an erection, they psychologically feel more prepared and desirous of sex. When women's erectile tissue is engorged, they don't necessarily, doesn't matter.
Is part of your work to make women more tuned into internal sexual cues, because maybe they're just not in touch with their bodies as much, and part of the therapy involves making them more aware and present to...
Absolutely. Yeah, because along with like the maca, along with the Korean red ginseng, along with the red clover, you know, along with those things, what I think is very important, obviously, is making sure that nutritionally she's doing well, that we've decreased inflammation. I have people do psychological exercises to improve their connection to their sexual desire. So, for example, if you live a very stressed life, if you have a bunch of young kids that you have to do all this stuff for, if you are, you know, stressed that you don't have any personal time for yourself to spend with your friends and recoup your energy, then sex gets put on the back burner. You don't think about it. And if you start to have some experiences where maybe you're uncomfortable or you're tired, but your partner wants it anyway, now you start to get that negative conditioning we spoke about before. And so you really turn yourself off. So if your brain can now learn to turn itself back on by focusing on experiences that were very exciting. So I have people actually first learn how to meditate and incorporate meditation to part of their daily practice, even if it's for 5 minutes in the middle of the day. And then what I teach them to do is to focus on positive sexual thoughts in such a way, so allow themselves time when they're not going to be disturbed, when no one's going to barge in and see the look on their face or, you know, hear them if they start breathing heavily, and to actually think about a peak sexual experience, a particularly favorite sexual fantasy, a memory, or something they'd like to have happen, and really allow themselves to incorporate as many senses as they can. Mm-hmm.
It's a experience. Form of mindfulness, really.
It is. Yeah. That's exactly what it is.
Is it being present, you know, not being distracted by external circumstances, mm-hmm. Being in the moment, you know, which so, you know, whether it's about sexuality or not, so few of us do. You know, we always are multitasking, and we have a lot of peripheral vision, but we're not able to look inward and gauge our internal states.
Right. And then when they do that, they are exercising that part of their brain that facilitates that arousal. They're getting back in tune with that. They're creating more blood flow to that neural tract. And so because the body and the brain are on a use it or lose it model, the more they do that, the easier it is for them to get back to that state of arousal. And so women will do this for a couple of weeks. They'll come back, you know, like, talk, I don't know what's going on, but I'm thinking about sex more often now. And I'm like, oh, it's a miracle. It's like magic.
Mm-hmm. We sort of eliminated some of the neurological roadblocks in terms of brain pathways that normally function. I mean, it's part of our biological endowment that we're given these impulses, but we do a lot to suppress them and interfere with them. So I wanted to ask you also about cannabinoids, because they're kind of the new kids on the block in terms of the endocannabinoid system. What's the relationship between the endocannabinoid system and sexuality?
Oh, yeah. Everybody's talking about cannabinoids now. Right? That's the hot new thing. Well, so there are obviously natural endocannabinoid in the body. They function to help our neurological system as well as our immune system. And there's CBD1 receptors, CBD2 receptors. We don't really know exactly how CBD2 affects sexual responsiveness, but CB1 can help with vasodilation and increase sexual motivation. But CBD can have a paradoxical effect if you have too much. So just like everything mm-hmm. else in the body, there is a certain range in which it's beneficial. If there's too little, that's not good. If it's too much, that's also not good. So I think with cannabis products, CBD products, which are now all the rage. I mean, I've seen everything from like CBD shampoo to CBD tea. I'm like, right. Really? It's like, yeah. I think people are thinking more is better. And, you know, naturally we have these endocannabinoids that help promote sexual arousal, and they correlate with levels of estrogen. They peak at, you know, ovulation when estrogen's high. But if you are overloading your system, you can actually have downregulation of receptors. Mm. And I don't know of anyone studying that in sexuality in particular. There have been studies to talk about cannabis and whether people feel more relaxed and have more sexual activity. And I think it's like alcohol. I think if you start off anxious and you use CBD or alcohol, for example, to quiet down or inhibit that part of your brain, which is just thinking, 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 then using that could actually improve your sexual desire because now the anxiety part's been quieted down. However, that points to a problem in anxiety, not a deficit of endocannabinoids per se. So I don't know. I'm very mixed about that. I mean, I do use CBD with some of my patients. I like the anxiolytic properties. I definitely like it for patients with traumatic brain injury and to help decrease the inflammation. But whenever people start talking about that and can it help my sexual arousal, I start to really look for what is impeding your sexual arousal to begin with. Mm-hmm. Because if you're a very anxious person, we're not really dealing with the root cause. And it's kind of like adding an SSRI. It's like we're overloading the system.
We're very oriented towards a quick fix, whether it's you know, in a pill form, whether it's from the health food store or the nutraceutical counter or from the pharmacy.
Right, exactly.
What about a couple other things? Pregnenolone. Pregnenolone is also in that hormone pathway. Do you ever find it of value?
Yes. So I like to check pregnenolone levels in my patients, particularly older patients. And again, just like DHEA, we don't have a lot of control which direction it's going to end up going to.
It's sort of a mother hormone. It's upstream and it makes a lot of things downstream. You don't necessarily know where it's going to go.
Right. So, for example, we might be wanting to increase someone's testosterone and we know that their pregnenolone levels are low and we give them pregnenolone and instead they make a ton of cortisol.
Right.
So what's happening there? And now we have to look at their thought process, their stress levels, because they're turning on certain, enzymes that are going to create more cortisol, and they're going to have that cortisol steal and not make as much testosterone. But absolutely, if someone is low in pregnenolone, then we know already they're not even able to make those downstream steroids. So yeah, that can be very, very helpful.
Another one that's getting some buzz these days is oxytocin. Obviously, if you have sex, you make a lot of oxytocin. It's the love hormone or the hug hormone.
Right.
Just touch, hugging can increase your oxytocin. But certainly orgasm can increase your oxytocin. But it's available as a compounded medication. Do you ever administer it to patients?
I prescribe it for patients. They administer it to themselves.
Yeah. Right.
But I have used oxytocin. It's very interesting that you asked me about oxytocin because I have several patients on oxytocin as a nasal spray.
Nasal spray, right, yeah.
And oxytocin, as you said, we start to get more release of oxytocin when we have touch. So if you think about foreplay and courtship and those things, those activities, especially foreplay and touching, kissing, caressing, those things increase oxytocin, which for a woman is very important for sexual desire and arousal, and for a man is very important for arousal as well. So the amount of oxytocin that he gets directly affects his erectile functioning. So we want the oxytocin before the orgasm so that it boosts our desire and our arousal physiologically. So it is prescribed for many people as a nasal spray. They spray it about 30 minutes before they want to have sex. And then the goal is to improve their engorgement of their erectile tissue and then therefore and desire so that they can have better sex. But yes, with a lot of stimulation and orgasm, you get a big boost of oxytocin, which then helps you feel closer, more bonded with the person.
Yeah, it's a very bonding thing. I mean, actually one of the relationship benefits of having a sexual partner is, I mean, it actually increases a chemical that enhances the biological basis for bonding, not just the psychological basis for bonding.
Right. So interestingly, I've also used oxytocin for some patients who have had pituitary infarctions because they can't.
They're just not making it. Yeah.
Right. Also for people who seem to have a lot of cachexia for their muscles. So oxytocin helps keep muscle tissue younger. It's one of the reasons why I think sex is so good for us. because we get a big boost of oxytocin, but so is cuddling and hugging and all that. It helps keep our muscles young.
Yeah, we tend to make, you know, sex, you know, very goal-oriented, you know, having the big O, you know, chalking them up, you know, as many as you can, you know, how many times a week, you know, is, I just did it twice a week. I got to look at my schedule, up my game, you know, that kind of thing. It's really not a matter of keeping score. It's just a matter, it's a matter of closeness and, you know, whatever your form of sexual expression, getting close, getting together, hugging, physical contact, can express many of the benefits. So that actually holds promise for, you know, people well into their, you know, 80s and 90s, that they can have a sexual experience, that's, both meaningful and physically beneficial. Whether or not it's not, you know, necessarily the conventional, you know, goal-oriented performance.
And that's one of the things I stress with my patients is I ask them, what falls in your definition of sex? Because if kissing is not on your list and stroking is not on your list and caressing is not on your list and thinking about it is not on your list, and you know, then you have a very, very narrow list, right? So of what you will accept.
Well, it's like modern Major League Baseball. It's like everybody's going for the home runs. So they either strike out or they hit a home run. There's no more base, you know, base hits and stealing on the bases, you know. Well, that's my analogy anyway.
No. You know what? You just reminded me of someone I know who actually watches sports. They record these with a DVR and they fast forward to the actual hit. They don't actually watch the game. And they say, well, that's the only important part. That's kind of what we're doing with sex as well.
Yeah, it's sort of reductionist, shall we say.
Absolutely. Okay. And dehumanizing. Yeah.
Indeed. Well, look, I really appreciate your sophisticated and nuanced approach to human sexuality. You know, you certainly have incorporated some very innovative techniques in your armamentarium. And, you know, once again, let's give our listeners the heads up. In practice in New York and in Florida. I guess because you're an MD, you don't do remote consultations. You really have to see people in person.
So I do have some patients that I do phone consultations for. If I'm actually going to be doing medicine, so it's like, you know, doing laboratory tests, interpreting those, prescribing, then I do have to see them in person.
Yeah, once we're more constrained than health coaches, for example. Absolutely. You know, just talk to you long distance.
Well, not only that, there's so much that is gathered information-wise from a physical exam and from seeing the person. And I don't do a genital exam, but certainly looking at skin, nails, you know, just a functional medicine physical exam that I think is crucial to know what's going on hormone-wise with the person. So once I see the person, you know, in person, then I can do remote consults.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. And the website is, you gave out a couple
so
before.
Absolutely. Thank you. I have thesexmd.com, and then I also have thebodymindmd.com.
Registered trademark.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
It is.
You nailed it.
Thank you.
Great. Oh, so thank you very much. Really appreciate your discussion about an issue that, you know, there's some taboos around this, often doesn't get a proper airing. But for people who want to really do a deep dive on the subject, let's recommend our book. A book for which we wrote chapters. It's called Integrative Sexual Health. It's part of the Wild Integrative Medicine Library. My chapter is on diet and human sexuality, and you can learn a great deal about all aspects of integrative sexual health from this book. Thank you so much for joining us, Madeline. It's a pleasure.
Thanks, Ron. It was my pleasure and all mine.
Okay. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. If you happen to be on a weight loss regimen, studies show that as fat cells shrink, they release stored toxins into the system that can actually poison metabolic pathways and slow your metabolism, causing your weight to plateau even in the face of stringent diet adherence. That's why I've created the Intelligent Medicine Detox Protocol, a collection of carefully curated supplements to mobilize toxin elimination, easing the blahs that sometimes compromise your dietary resolve. The Intelligent Medicine Detox Protocol is an easy way to get the exact combination of the targeted nutrients you need. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com for more information and to purchase. Plus, you'll find easy-to-follow links to our heart health and immunity protocols and much more. And for a limited time, you'll get free shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com.